and dying, aren't I? Healer, why did you take my blood? Who's that beside you with this head of lines? I can see a distant sun, dark and cold, shining in a black sky.
Collected on the third day of Yesnan, 1172, 11 seconds pre-death. Subject was a Reshi Chul trainer. Sample is of particular note.
Why don't you cry?
Kaladin sat with his back to the corner of the cage, looking down. The floor planks in front of him were splintered, as if someone had dug at them with nothing but his fingernails. The splintered section was stained dark where the dry gray wood had soaked up blood. A futile, delusional attempt at escape. The wagon continued to roll. The same routine each day. Wake up sore and aching from a fitful night spent without mattress or blanket. One wagon at a time, the slaves were let out and hobbled with leg irons and given time to shuffle around and relieve themselves. Then they were packed away and given morning slop. And the wagons rolled until afternoon slop. More rolling. Evening slop, then a ladle of water before sleep. Kaladin's shash brand was still cracked and bleeding. At least the cage's top gave shade from the sun. The windspren shifted to mist, floating like a tiny cloud. She moved in close to Kaladin, the motion outlining her face at the front of the cloud, as if blowing back the fog and revealing something more substantial underneath. Vaporous, feminine and angular, with such curious eyes, like no other spren he'd seen.
The others cry at night, but you don't.
Why cry? What would it change?
I don't know. Why do men cry?
Ask the Almighty why men cry, little spren. Not me.
Kaladin's forehead dripped with sweat from the eastern summer humidity, and it stung as it seeped into his wound. Hopefully, they'd have some weeks of spring again soon. Weather and seasons were unpredictable. You never knew how long they would go on, though typically each would last a few weeks. The wagon rolled on. After a time, he felt sunlight on his face. He opened his eyes. The sun shone in through the upper side of the cage. 2 or 3 hours past noon, then. What of afternoon slop? Kaladin stood, pulling himself up with one hand on the steel bars. He couldn't make out Tlakev driving the wagon up ahead, only flat-faced Bluth behind. The mercenary had on a dirty shirt that laced up the front and wore a wide-brimmed hat against the sun, his spear and cudgel riding on the wagon bench beside him. He didn't carry a sword. Not even Tlakev did that, not near Alethi land. The grass continued to part for the wagons, vanishing just in front, then creeping out after the wagons passed. The landscape here was dotted with strange shrubs that Kaladin didn't recognize. They had thick stalks and stems and spiny green needles. Whenever the wagons drew too close, the needles pulled into the stalks, leaving behind twisted worm-like trunks with knotted branches. They dotted the hilly landscape, rising from the grass-covered rocks like diminutive sentries. The wagons just kept on going, well past noon.
Why aren't we stopping for slop?
The lead wagon finally pulled to a stop. The other two lurched to a halt behind it, the red carapaced chulls fidgeting, their antennae waving back and forth. The buck-shaped animals had bulging stony shells and thick, trunk-like red legs. From what Kaladin had heard, their claws could snap a man's arm. But chulls were docile, particularly domesticated ones, and he'd never known anyone in the army to get more than a half-hearted pinch from one. Bluth and Tag climbed down from their wagons and walked up to meet Tlakev. The slave master stood on his wagon seat, shading his eyes against the white sunlight and holding a sheet of paper in his hand. An argument ensued. Tlakev kept waving in the direction they had been going, then pointing at his sheet of paper.
Lost, Tlakev? Perhaps you should pray to the Almighty for guidance. I hear he has a fondness for slavers. Keeps a special room in Damnation just for you.
To Kaladin's left, one of the slaves, the long-bearded man who had talked to him a few days back, sidled away, not wanting to stand close to a person who was provoking the slaver. Tlakev hesitated, then waved curtly to his mercenaries, silencing them. The portly man hopped down from his wagon and walked over to Kaladin.
You, deserter! Let the armies travel these lands for their war. Do you know anything of the area?
Let me see the map.
Tlakev hesitated, then held it up for Kaladin. Kaladin reached through the bars and snatched the paper. Then, without reading it, Kaladin ripped it in two. In seconds, he'd shredded it into 100 pieces in front of Tlakev's horrified eyes.
Bluth! Tag!
By the time they arrived, Kaladin had a double handful of confetti to toss out at them.
Happy Middlefest, you bastards.
Kaladin turned and walked to the other side of the cage and sat down facing them. Tlakev stood, speechless. Then, red-faced, he pointed at Kaladin. Bluth took a step toward the cage, but then thought better of it. He glanced at Tlakev, then shrugged and walked away. Tlakev turned to Tag, but the other mercenary just shook his head. After a few minutes of stewing at the cowardly mercenaries, Tlakev rounded the cage and approached where Kaladin was sitting.
I see you are clever, deserter. You have made yourself invaluable. My other slaves, they aren't from this area, and I have never come this way. You can bargain. What is it you wish in exchange for leading us? I can promise you an extra meal each day, should you please me.
You want me to lead the caravan?
Instructions will be acceptable.
All right. First, find a cliff.
That it would give you vantage to see the area?
No. It will give me something to throw you off of.
You hate me. That is good. Hatred will keep you strong, make you sell for much. But you will not find vengeance on me unless I have a chance to take you to the market. I will not let you escape. But perhaps someone else would. You want to be sold, you see.
I don't want vengeance.
The Windspren came back. She darted off for a time to inspect one of the strange shrubs. She landed in the air and began walking around Tlakev's face, inspecting him. He didn't seem to be able to see her.
No vengeance.
It doesn't work. I learned that lesson long ago.
Long ago? You cannot be older than 18 years, deserter.
It was a good guess. He was 19. Had it really only been 4 years since he'd joined Amaram's army? Kaladin felt as if he'd aged a dozen.
You are young. You could escape this fate of yours. Men have been known to live beyond the slave's brand. You could pay off your slave price, you see, or convince one of your masters to give you freedom. You could become a free man again. It is not so unlikely.
I'll never be free of these brands, Tlakev. You must know that I've tried and failed to escape 10 times over. It's more than these glyphs on my head that makes your mercenaries wary.
Past failures does not prove there is not a chance in the future, yes?
I'm finished. I don't care. Besides, you don't actually believe what you're saying. I doubt a man like you would be able to sleep at night if he thought the slaves he sold would be free to seek him out one day.
Perhaps, deserter. Perhaps you are right. Or perhaps I simply think that if you were to get free, you would hunt down the first man who sold you to slavery, you see? High Lord Amaram, was it not? His death would give me warning, so I can run.
How had he known? How had he heard about Amaram?
I'll find him. I'll gut him with my own hands. I'll twist his head right off his neck.
Yes! So, you were not so honest when you said you do not thirst for vengeance. I see.
How do you know about Amaram? I've changed hands 6 times since then.
Men talk. Slavers more than most. We must be friends with one another, you see? For nobody else will stomach us.
Then you know that I didn't get this brand for deserting.
Ah, but it is what we must pretend, you see? Men guilty of high crimes, they do not sell so well. With that shash glyph on your head, it will be difficult enough to get a good price for you. If I cannot sell you, then you... Well, you will not wish for that status. So, we will play a game together. I will say you are a deserter, and you will say nothing. It is an easy game, I think.
It's illegal.
We are not in Alethkar, so there is no law. Besides, desertion was the official reason for your sale. Claim otherwise, and you will gain nothing but a reputation for dishonesty.
Nothing besides a headache for you.
But you just said you have no desire for vengeance against me.
I could learn.
If you have not learned that already, then you probably never will. Besides, did you not threaten to throw me off a cliff? I think you have already learned. But now we must discuss how to proceed. My map has met with an untimely demise, you see.
I don't know. I've never been this way either.
Tlakhev frowned. He leaned closer to the cage, inspecting Kaladin, though he still kept his distance. After a moment, Tlakhev shook his head.
I believe you, deserter. A pity. Well, I shall trust my memory. The map was poorly rendered anyway. I'm almost glad you ripped it, for I was tempted to do the same myself. If I should happen across any portraits of my former wives, I shall see that they cross your path and take advantage of your unique talents.
Kaladin watched him go.
Almighty.
What was that for?
I almost find myself liking him.
But after what he did?
I didn't say Tlakhev isn't a bastard. He's just a likable bastard. Those are the worst kind. When you kill them, you end up feeling guilty for it.
The wagon leaked during high storms. That wasn't surprising. Kaladin suspected that Tlakhev had been driven to slaving by ill fortune. He would rather be trading other goods, but something, lack of funds, a need to leave his previous environs with haste, had forced him to pick up this least reputable of careers. Men like him couldn't afford luxury or even quality. They could barely stay ahead of their debts. In this case, that meant wagons which leaked. The boarded sides were strong enough to withstand high storm winds, but they weren't comfortable. Tlakhev had almost missed getting ready for this high storm. Apparently, the map Kaladin had torn up had also included a list of high storm dates purchased from a roving storm warden. The storms could be predicted mathematically. Kaladin's father had made a hobby of it. He'd been able to pick the right day 8 times out of 10. Icy rainwater sprayed through cracks. Flashes of lightning leaked through as well. That was the only light they got. Occasionally, light would flash without the thunder. The slaves would groan in terror at this, thinking about the Stormfather, the shades of the Lost Radiance, or the Voidbringers, all of which were said to haunt the most violent high storms. They huddled together on the far side of the wagon, sharing warmth. Kaladin left them to it, sitting alone with his back to the bars. Kaladin didn't fear stories of things that walked the storms. In the army, he'd been forced to weather a high storm or two beneath the lip of a protective stone overhang or other bit of impromptu shelter. Nobody liked to be out during a storm, but sometimes you couldn't avoid it. The things that walked the storms, perhaps even the Stormfather himself, weren't nearly so deadly as the rocks and branches cast up into the air. In fact, the storm's initial tempest of water and wind, the storm wall, was the most dangerous part. The longer one endured after that, the weaker the storm grew, until the trailing edge was nothing more than sprinkling rain. No, he wasn't worried about Voidbringers looking for flesh to feast upon. He was worried that something would happen to Tlakhev. The slave master waited out the storm in a cramped wooden enclosure built into the bottom of his wagon. That was ostensibly the safest place in the caravan. But an unlikely twist of fate, a tempest-thrown boulder, the collapse of the wagon, could leave him dead. In that case, Kaladin could see both Bluth and Tag running off, leaving everyone in their cages, wooden sides locked up. The slaves would die a slow death by starvation and dehydration, baking under the sun in these boxes. The storm continued to blow, shaking the wagon. Those winds felt like live things at times, and who was to say they weren't? Were Windspren attracted to gusts of wind, or were they the gusts of wind? The souls of the force that now wanted so badly to destroy Kaladin's wagon. That force, sentient or not, failed. The wagons were chained to nearby boulders with their wheels locked. The blasts of wind grew more lethargic. Lightning stopped flashing. Only once during their journey had a wagon toppled during a high storm. Both it and the slaves inside had survived, with a few dents and bruises. The wooden side to Kaladin's right fell open as Bluth undid its clasps. The mercenary wore his leather coat against the wet streams of water falling from the brim of his hat as he exposed the bars and the occupants to the rain. It was cold, though not as piercingly so as during the height of the storm. It sprayed across Kaladin and the huddled slaves. Tlakev always ordered the wagons uncovered before the rain stopped. He said it was the only way to wash away the slave stink. Bluth slid the wooden side into place beneath the wagon, then opened the other two sides. Only the wall at the front of the wagon, just behind the driver's seat, couldn't be brought down.
A little early to be taking down the sides, Bluth.
It wasn't quite the riddance yet. The period near the end of a high storm when the rain sprinkled softly. This rain was still heavy, the wind still gusting on occasion.
The master wants you plenty clean today.
Why?
Bluth ignored him.
Perhaps we're nearing our destination.
Over the last few days, the hills had given way to uneven rock formations, places where weathering wind had left behind crumbling cliffs and jagged shapes. Grass grew up the rocky sides that saw the most sun, and other plants were plentiful in the shade. The time, right after a high storm, was when the land was most alive. Rockbud polyps split and sent out their vines. Other kinds of vine crept from crevices, licking up water. Leaves unfolded from shrubs and trees. Kremlings of all kinds slithered through puddles, enjoying the banquet. Insects buzzed into the air. Larger crustaceans, crabs, and leggers left their hiding places. The very rocks seemed to come alive. Kaladin noted a half-dozen windspren flitting overhead, their translucent forms chasing after, or perhaps cruising along with, the high storm's last gusts. Tiny lights rose around the plants, lifespren. They looked like motes of glowing green dust or swarms of tiny translucent insects. A legger, its hair-like spines lifted to the air to give warning of changes in the wind, climbed along the side of the cart, its long body lined with dozens of pairs of legs. That was familiar enough, but he'd never seen a legger with such a deep purple carapace. Where was Tlakev taking the caravan? Those uncultivated hillsides were perfect for farming. You could spread stump wheat sap on them, mixed with lavish seeds, during seasons of weaker storms following the weeping. In 4 months, you'd have polyps larger than a man's head growing all along the hill, ready to break open for the grain inside. The chulls lumbered about, feasting on rock buds, slugs, and smaller crustaceans that had appeared after the storm. Tag and Bluth quietly hitched the beasts to their harnesses as a grumpy-looking Tlakev crawled out of his waterproof refuge. The slave master pulled on a cap and deep black cloak against the rain. He rarely came out until the storm had passed completely. He was very eager to get to their destination. Were they that close to the coast? That was one of the only places where they'd find cities in the unclaimed hills. Within minutes, the wagons were rolling again across the uneven ground. Kaladin settled back as the sky cleared, the high storm a smudge of blackness on the western horizon. The sun brought welcome warmth, and the slaves basked in the light streams of water dripping from their clothing and running out the back of the rocking wagon. Presently, a translucent ribbon of light zipped up to Kaladin. He was coming to take the Windspren's presence for granted. She had gone out during the high storm, but she'd come back, as always.
I saw others of your kind.
Others?
She began to step around him in the air, spinning occasionally, dancing to some unheard beat.
Windspren, chasing after the storm. Are you certain you don't want to go with him?
No, I like it here.
Kaladin shrugged. She'd ceased playing as many pranks as she once had, and so he stopped letting her presence annoy him.
There are others near. Others like you.
Slaves?
I don't know. People. Not the ones here. Other ones.
Where?
She turned a translucent white finger, pointing eastward.
There. Many of them. Lots and lots.
Kaladin stood up. He couldn't imagine that a Spren had a good handle on how to measure distance and numbers. Kaladin studied the horizon.
Yes, that smoke. From chimneys?
He caught a gust of it on the wind. If not for the rain, he'd probably have smelled it sooner. Should he care? It didn't matter where he was a slave. He'd still be a slave. He'd accepted this life. That was his way now.
Don't care, don't bother.
Still, he watched with curiosity as his wagon climbed the side of a hill and gave the slaves inside a good vantage of what was ahead. It wasn't a city. It was something grander, something larger, an enormous army encampment.
Great Father of Storms.
10 masses of troops bivouacked in familiar Alephi patterns, circular by company rank, with camp followers on the outskirts, mercenaries in a ring just inside them, citizen soldiers near the middle, light-eyed officers at the very center. They were camped in a series of enormous crater-like rock formations. Only the sides were more irregular, more jagged, like broken eggshells. Kaladin had left an army much like this 8 months ago, though Amaran's forces had been much smaller. This one covered miles of stone stretching far both north and south. 1,000 banners bearing 1,000 different family glyph pairs flapped proudly in the air. There were some tents, mainly on the outside of the armies, but most of the troops were housed in large stone barracks. That meant soulcasters. This encampment directly ahead of them flew a banner Kaladin had seen in books. Deep blue with white glyphs, koch and lintel stylized and painted as a sword standing before a crown. House Kolin, the king's house. Daunted, Kaladin looked beyond the armies. The landscape to the east was as he'd heard it described, in a dozen different stories detailing the king's campaign against the Parshendi betrayers. It was an enormous riven plain of rock, so wide he couldn't see the other side, that was split and cut by sheer chasms, crevasses 20 or 30 feet wide. They were so deep that they disappeared into darkness and formed a jagged mosaic of uneven plateaus, some large, others tiny. The expansive plain looked like a platter that had been broken, its pieces then reassembled with small gaps between the fragments.
The shattered plains.
What? What's wrong?
I spent years trying to get to this place. It's what Tien wanted, in the end at least. To come here, fight in the king's army.
And now, Kaladin was here. Finally. Accidentally. He felt like laughing at the absurdity.
I should have realized. I should have known. We weren't ever heading toward the coast and its cities. We were heading here to war.
This place would be subject to Alephi law and rules. He'd expected that Tlakev would want to avoid such things. But here, he'd probably also find the best prices.
The Shattered Plains? Really?
Others crowded around, peering out. In their sudden excitement, they seemed to forget their fear of Kaladin.
It is the Shattered Plains. That's the king's army.
Perhaps we'll find justice here.
I hear the king's household servants live as well as the finest merchants. We'll be in Vorinland. We'll even make wages.
That much was true. When worked, slaves had to be paid a small wage. Half what a non-slave would be paid, which was already often less than a full citizen would make for the same work. But it was something. And Alephi law required it. Only Ardens, who couldn't own anything anyway, didn't have to be paid. Well, them and Parshmen. But Parshmen were more animal than anything else. A slave could apply his earnings to his slave debt and, after years of labor, earn his freedom, theoretically. The wagon rolled down the incline, but Kaladin withdrew to the back of the wagon. He suspected that the option to pay off a slave's price was a sham, intended to keep slaves docile. The debt was enormous, far more than a slave sold for, and virtually impossible to earn out. Under previous masters, he'd demanded his wages be given to him. They had always found ways to cheat him, charging him for his housing, his food. That's how Light Eyes were. Rishun, Amaram, Katarotam. Each Light Eyes Kaladin had known, whether as a slave or a free man, had shown himself to be corrupt to the core for all his outward poise and beauty. They were like rotting corpses clothed in beautiful silk. The other slaves kept talking about the king's army and about justice.
Justice? I'm not convinced there is such a thing as justice.
Still, he found himself wondering. This was the king's army. The armies of all 10 high princes come to fulfill the vengeance pact. If there was one thing he still let himself long for, it was the chance to hold a spear, to fight again, to try and find his way back to the man he had been, a man who had cared. If he would find that anywhere, he'd find it here.